How are you, TV star?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's crazy.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 166, Modern Family Miracle. In the last few weeks, we've been talking about the TV show Lost, the first five seasons of which we reduced down to 10 minutes, and which you can find on YouTube right now. But there's another show on both ABC in the States and Sky One HD in the UK, a new hit sitcom called Modern Family. It's very funny, very sweet, and Eric Stonestreet is one of the breakout stars. Eric plays Cameron, who with his partner Mitchell is raising their adorable adopted daughter while driving his father-in-law, played by Married with Children's Ed O'Neill, quietly nuts. As Eric and I sat down to chat in a coffee shop in the Valley, he was talking about how his life has changed, which is exactly when Katie Sagal from Futurama and famously Peg Bundy from Married with Children stopped by to introduce herself.
That's, the stuff does happen. It's not often that Katie Sagal sees me at a coffee shop and says that she's a fan of the show. When you add in that it's Ed O'Neill's TV wife, it just adds to the "Wow, we live in L.A." moment. Only that's like truly an only in L.A. moment.
And it ties in so beautifully with the theme of this podcast of the modern family miracle. The miracle that is Modern Family on all levels. But first of all, let's talk about how it's a miracle for you. Because you've been kicking around L.A. as a character actor in mostly hour-long dramas, but I'm sure some sitcoms, for a year or two now, yeah?
It's been, I've been in L.A. for 11 years.
Okay.
Was in Chicago for 2 years before that. And yeah, just been doing what every actor does every day when you're lucky enough to get to audition and have those opportunities and read the material the night before.
And how were you typed? Because we're all typed in L.A. How were you typed?
Well, you know, early on I was typed as the idiot man-child, which I was glad to embrace because I was smart.
Gee, you could have toured with us.
I could have. You know, I was coming into Chicago at the time when Chris Farley was still on Saturday Night Live and breaking as a movie star, so
right.
People definitely saw me as that type of person, and I was happy to take that on.
Yeah.
But I always knew that I wanted to do something different and more than that.
This is so glamorous, too, here. It's chatting as we are in the flight path of Burbank Airport.
Yeah, we're in the flight path of Burbank Airport, and we would normally hold for that, but on this podcast, we just roll right through it.
Reduced sound quality, reduced Hello. Entertainment, reduced interest. Go ahead.
Reduced guests. So then when I moved to Los Angeles, you know, I was in the improv world and an improv Olympic, and people, you know, want to see you as, once you put improv on your resume, they have an expectation.
Yes. So after all these years of kicking around, the casting directors knew you, but I doubt that they knew you necessarily as a large, effeminate, gregarious, musical-loving gay man.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the challenge of getting the part. You know, in the beginning, they weren't open to my type at all. They had written somewhere that they were interested in an Andy Richter type, but I don't know where that piece of paper. I never saw that piece of paper, but apparently that was out there in the beginning. And then they sort of honed in on a different type. So it took a long time. I came on very sort of late in the process. Actually, it was yesterday, a year ago, that I got the part.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Yeah, thank you. 100%. But it took a little fight to get in the room because the casting director, Jeff Greenberg, knew my work.
Uh-huh.
But the producers weren't necessarily open to me and people of my type, big guy, in that role. And we got in the, you know, I finally got in the room, and then it was...
Well, and who did the fighting? Did Jeff do the fighting? Did your agents?
No, my manager and my agents, you know, they... I had actually helped our friend, someone we know, with the material before I even got to go in on the audition.
Oh, okay.
He came over to my house. We read. I kind of went over the lines with them, and I was just sitting there fuming on the inside, like, I can't believe I'm not getting the chance to go in on this audition, you know, gritting my teeth. Then I finally got in the room, and I went to one producer's, and then they passed. They said it wasn't going to go any further, which is a term we all love in this business, not going any further.
Mm-hmm.
And then they called back about a week and a half later and said we'd like Eric to come back in, do the same material, dressed more of the part. I took that to mean lavender gingham. So I went and got a lavender gingham shirt.
You didn't pull it out of your closet?
No. I went to Macy's and went back in and did it again, and it was again a pass. It was again, it's not going to go any further.
Wow.
And then 3 days passed again, and of more auditions, and I knew a couple people that had gone in and in those time periods. And then they called on a Thursday and said, hey, we're going to test Eric on next Tuesday.
So it went from pass to we're going to bring you in for a test with
It went from a pass to they can't get Eric's read out of their mind. They still have that in their mind, even though they weren't open to it or thinking that the studio and the network would buy. Because you know how it is. It's all about setting yourself up to be successful.
Yeah.
And if they thought at all the studio or network would balk at me playing the character, they didn't want to take that risk and get everybody together and do that whole thing that they have to do and waste potentially everyone's time.
Because in their minds they go, well, the network is judging the show based on every decision we make. So if we make this decision and go with Eric, then that could be seen as suspect and jeopardize the whole thing.
Well, I think that's definitely part of it. It's such a fleeting case, you know, which is sort of what we're talking about, how it does really become sort of a miracle that things get together and work out.
Yeah.
But, you know, it went from a pass to let's test him and just put him in the room and see if the chemistry works between myself and Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
Uh-huh.
I did the studio test, and then the next day I did the network test. And the part I love about the story the most, Austin, and seriously, it's so funny to me, is you see where I live here in Studio City Valley Village, you know, and I tested at ABC. It takes me 15 minutes to get from ABC to home.
Uh-huh.
I left there after the test, the network test, and I had the part before I pulled in my driveway.
That's fantastic.
So my point and why I get so smiley-faced about that is it's the actor's vindication. It's like give an actor a chance.
Yeah.
Put them in the room to win a job for themselves.
Yeah.
And the decision becomes less hard. It's when we start thinking about it or when people start thinking about it and intellectualizing it and will it work or will it won't. Let's just see if it works.
Yeah.
Give them the opportunity.
Yeah. And if it doesn't work, we all go home.
Yeah. And if it does work, you find out 15 minutes after you auditioned that you got the part.
And was Jesse already been cast?
Yeah, he'd already been cast. So he was in my studio test and my network test. We worked together in that, which was a godsend. I mean, that's, you know, we don't always get to, we always read with casting directors.
Yeah.
Some are more into the material than others.
Yeah.
We've all read for casting directors, you know, that are awful readers, you know.
Well, and it's not just your performance. It is the chemistry between you and the other actor. We, you know, you had to believe that this is a loving couple that would be together. And we totally did.
And I believe that we're the only couple that got our parts that way. I know Ed and Sophia didn't read together, and I don't believe Ty and Julie read together, so I think it was only Jesse and I that really read together, and I think that was one of their primary concerns is, you know, do we have chemistry? And I think we do.
You know, we've known each other since neither one of us were stars.
We were in an episode of
Providence
together.
That's right.
What it was.
That's right.
And I knew who you were, like, because I'd heard your name, like, you were like one of those guys that everyone was like, oh, well, you know Austin. And I'm like, you know, actually, no, I don't. I've heard his name a lot, but thanks for rubbing it in that I don't know him. Well, you know his wife, Dee. Well, actually, no, I don't. I just know who they are.
Right.
I remember us coming to that table read together.
You came up to me at the table read. Hi, you're Austin, right?
Yeah.
I've been in your house. I went, huh?
Yeah, I coached improv in your house, actually.
That's right.
That's what it was. Well, but I follow you on Twitter and have been doing since before Modern Family. But what's fun about what you're doing is that those of us who follow you on Twitter and those of who know you before and now after, we get to see you get turned into this celebrity and a guy who's loving it.
Yeah, well, I think you... I think we work so hard as an actor. Like, there has to be a healthy amount of embrace of some of the fun things that are happening. I don't want to be a self-hating actor. I don't want to turn into a jerk. But by the same token, people, I wouldn't devalue the hard work that I, you, and every other actor has done over the years by not participating in some of the things that I get the opportunity. Yesterday, Austin, Joseph Abboud, a suit maker, said, "Hey, we want you to wear our suits when you go to places." And I said, "Okay." Like, why wouldn't I say okay?
Exactly.
I need frickin' clothes to wear. I'm running out of clothes like you can't believe.
Well,
and you've got now an image to maintain of a TV star.
I have to look good when I'm out in public, unlike right now.
I was going to say, today you're kind of letting the side down.
Absolutely. It's a casual day for me. But you know what? No, I want to participate in the things that, you know, and look, I'm going to get the opportunity to raise money for people by just because I'm on a TV show and charities.
Yeah.
And I welcome and can't wait for those opportunities to happen. And to be able to, you know, I say, if an actor packed his lunch every night before work and grabbed his tool belt the morning he left, that's the actor I consider myself.
Right.
And I feel like I just am working on a skyscraper right now. I know for a fact that I've got some work for a while, that I'm going to be, you know, happily employed for a minute, and I'm going to enjoy it while I can.
Because, well, and those of us who follow you get to enjoy it vicariously through you because we get to share your enthusiasm.
Well, and I hope that's the case, and I hope people enjoy seeing where I get to go and people I get to meet.
Just please, more pictures of Sophia in the bouncy hut.
I have a lot of those pictures that I didn't tweet. I'll show you when we turn this off.
So, in your hiatus, are you going to do the big thing of a TV actor gets a movie part?
Well, I've expressed to my managers and agents my desire, and this is one of the great parts of working with Ed O'Neill, is he gives good sage advice, that I don't want to... If I get those opportunities, which, you know, they tell me that I will get those opportunities, I don't want to be the lead of Space Dogs 9 because I can be, you know. I would rather do 5 lines in a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, right.
True Grit, specifically, Joel and Ethan. you know, I would rather do...
Ned Pepper.
Yeah. I would rather just do a good cameo part in a good movie and enjoy my time off and relax and embrace the fact that I've worked hard to have a job and to just enjoy having a job and not feel the pressure to go get another job on top of the job that I already have.
Well, and don't exhaust yourself. Don't squander this gift that you've...
Well, and Ed did tell me that. He said, after the first season of Married with Children, he did the movie Dutch, and it exhausted him, and they didn't finish it in time, and then he was tired going into the second season of Married with Children and doing night shoots.
Yeah.
And it's not like I don't think I'm going to have that opportunity right now, but, you know,
John Hughes is dead.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to do Dutch 2 for sure. but, you know, it goes back to what we were talking about as far as embracing and being excited about what the opportunities I have are and the things I'm getting to do, and being a business person, you know, I absolutely have to take advantage of those opportunities right now if people want to hire me.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I want to build and continue to have what I feel is like a classy, good career, and not just whore myself out.
Well, and, you know, you have the burden, the horrible burden of a regular job on a really well-written, extremely well-written show. It's almost, it can only go downhill from here.
I know. And somebody asked me that, like, what TV would you do after this? And I said, I do not even want to think about that. Like, I am in the middle of the first season. But then after I walked away, I was like, they're right.
Yeah.
Like, what TV show, except that look what Ed O'Neill did. Look what Katie Sagal did.
Yeah. Well, and I read Ed O'Neill, a quote by Ed O'Neill, who said something like, you know, people come up to him afterwards and say, "Oh my God, I love Modern Family. I love it so much." And he goes, "Thank you. I get that." But people would say that about Married with Children. He went, "What? Really?
Yeah,
you
do?" He would say, "Explain it to me. What's funny about it? I don't get it." Which is so hilarious and so, you know, if I read that and didn't know him, I wouldn't understand. But knowing him, I totally hear that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just want to enjoy these days. I can't tell you, somebody asked me at the Golden Globes or the SAG Awards, like, if it was surreal and exciting being there. And I said, it's all surreal. I said, but you know what? We just got the most hilarious script delivered to the house yesterday, and I can't wait to get back to work to shoot that next week. It's all great, man.
Yeah, it is all good. Good for you.
Hi, this is Phil Abrams. I played Mr. Gellert, John Locke's high school teacher, on an episode of Lost. John, you can't be the quarterback. You can't be a superhero, but you can be listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast.
Where can you see the RSC? This week, you can see us performing completely Hollywood abridged in Santa Rosa and Sonoma, California. You can also watch Lost Reduced on YouTube. And on March 5th, we premiere on Broadway adjacent at the new Victory Theater in New York City with the show What Started It All, the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, revised. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for specific venue and ticket information.
Let's talk about the other aspect of this Modern Family miracle, which is just how good the show is and how good the show was from the very first script. Because I don't go in on that many pilot auditions, but I actually went in on this, and I read for either Cameron or Mitchell. And when I went in to read, I finished reading the script. I went, wait, I'm too old. I'm way too old. I should be auditioning to play Ed O'Neill's friends.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but you know, the script was good immediately, and you know, you asked Ed O'Neill why he's even a part of the project is because the script, he said, was funny, and it interested him, you know, like...
I think the show is just, it was called, in the pilot stage, it was called My American Family. So there was a little bit of pull, a little string thread of mystery that you had reading the script, because you saw these three families, you went, well, how is this all related? Then you come to find out, oh, I see, it's sort of kind of written from the point of view of your adopted daughter.
Yeah.
And so all these people are related, which I thought was a lovely gimmick, and I can see why they got rid of it, because you don't really need it anymore. But it was just funny, and I thought it hit that sweet spot of funny and sweet right out of the gate.
Well, isn't it? I think it's really great that our writers and creators risk that, in especially in today's sort of snarky comedic climate of TV, to risk putting your heart on your sleeve and allowing people to make fun of us for taking you to the line of sappy, I think takes courage, and you know, I know that we all appreciate it.
And you must get emails every week from people saying, oh, dude, that totally happened to me, you know, when you and Mitchell are trying to ferberize the baby and let the baby sleep by crawling itself to sleep. We've been there. We've all been there.
It's really remarkable. And being sort of on the inside of the show, meaning going to work every day, learning my lines and, you know, doing the things that it takes to be in the show, you kind of forget about how relatable it is to other people. And that's really what's great about getting out and meeting people and seeing people. And I think that's another thing what we talked about as far as why the show is what it is there's so many avenues in for people, whether you're a Latin person who loves Sofia Vergara, whether you're a Married with Children fan who loves Al Bundy, whether you're a gay man with a partner raising a child, or whether you're a child watching because, you know...
Or whether you're a dopey straight guy whose wife doesn't let you get away with anything and your kids are running the house.
The golden ticket. My brother called the day after his five-armed gesticulating robot, you know, that whole thing about how he had the golden ticket just went down the drain. My brother related to that so well. But they just created a show that's you have multiple ways of getting into.
How rare is it, and therefore how delightful is it, that the... creators, that the writers on Modern Family take so much from your own life and put it into the character of Cameron?
Well, it's really exciting. They do that for everybody. You know, the whole moment of the Fizbo episode where it happened at the gas station where I defended Mitchell with the tough guy, that actually happened to Ed O'Neill. He was at a gas station and a guy hit him with his car. And he's like, hey, you just hit me with the car. And the guy started giving Ed O'Neill trouble. And Ed O'Neill's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And Ed was like, I just wanted him to come close to me. I just wanted to get my hands on him. So he was telling the writers a story, and they're like, that's a brilliant story. Where can it fit into the show? Well, here's where it fits into the show. But you're going to find out Cameron plays the drums, and, you know, I'm a drummer. You're going to find out that I was raised, you know, it's mentioned that I've been raised on a farm, and growing up I was in 4-H and had pigs.
But you played football.
And I played football and have a sports background, you know. So it's really cool, and it's awesome that they're open to it. But I think that really, is in essence, across the board, is one of the things that really adds a realism and believability to the show. Because we're playing away from ourselves. I mean, I'm playing a character, but at the heart, it's like, how
how do you bring honesty and truth to everything you do? Well, in this case, they're allowing me to bring honesty and truth from my past.
And it makes the character that much more rich and interesting. He's not just a Queenie gay guy, you know?
Well, we think that. Unfortunately, there are always going to be the people that think we're stereotypical. And I say, yeah, a gay ex-football playing clown who plays the drums and racquetball and play, you know, is seen it a thousand times.
If I had a nickel.
So we're never going to be able to, we're never going to be able to meet everybody where we are, but we're doing our best to create, not a gay character, we're doing our best to create a character. And the sooner we can get on board with the fact that he's just a guy raising a baby, and that gay is not part of the vernacular of describing who you are, the better off we all are.
I want to ask you about what I imagine to be your two greatest acting challenges probably on this show. One is not just to play a character who is so effeminate and different than you, but to play it honestly and believably and not over the top and campy and horrible. Is that hard? Is it like how do you do?
Well, I like to take it right to the line. I hope that I take it right there, like a good accountant. A good accountant won't break the law for you, but he'll take you right to the line of the law.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I want Cameron to live in that dangerous area of being too much, but because I think that's what the show does so well.
Yeah.
Is it goes to the point and pulls back just a little. For me, when I was auditioning, I knew when I read this material and thinking of how I would play it if I got the chance, that Cameron was a version of my mom. And I knew from the very beginning that if I got the chance to go in there, that I was going to do just a slight impersonation of how my mom is.
Yeah.
And there's one line in the pilot that is that moment where I walk in and there's the murals on the wall of us floating above. And my reaction is, oh my God, do you love it?
Uh-huh.
And that is my mother in that moment. The hands up above and just, do you love it?
Uh-huh.
And so I have those little flagpoles along the way. I call them the little anchors, flagpoles, what have you, that sort of I can check in with at any moment to say, okay, my mom's a real person, and she's not over the top and dramatic and big. So if I can always just hit that area that she would hit, then I know I'm still in the ground, in the realm of grounded and real.
Cool.
Well, and then this leads to what I imagine has to be an enormous acting challenge. You're supposed to be gay and attracted to Mitchell. How do you keep your eyes from wandering over to Sofia Vergara?
And Julie Bowen. I say we have the modern day Marianne and Ginger on our show.
You do.
And I go back and forth. I vacillate every day, back and forth. Which, if I could, it's terrible. All right, wait a minute. You know, they're both very different women. They're both beautiful women. And it's so funny. I have an episode coming up that just Cameron and Sophia are together the whole episode. And we shot it. And I joked and said, this will be the true challenge. If people can see not one ounce of lust and attraction in my eyes during this episode, then I will have been successful. We were shooting the episode with Elizabeth Banks, and we're in the bar, and she's got boobs, and she's shaking her boobs, and Jason Weiner, our director, comes over, and he pulls me to the side, and he goes, hey, Eric, you may not want to focus on Elizabeth's boobs as much as you are in these takes. I'm like, am I really? He goes, yeah, just don't forget your Cameron. I'm like, oh, man, busted. As far as, like, how the show started to build that, holy cow, this thing might get picked up, and then this thing might be on the air and get picked up for the back nine, is people kept sort of responding to the different aspects that were started layering in, you know. Mm-hmm. When Ed called us, Ed saw the pilot first, and he called us all the day after he saw it, and his remark to me was, Eric, it's a fully realized pilot, which I think is the perfect way of describing it. It couldn't be any better than it was. They totally got it off the page.
Yeah.
And I think the performances are all solid.
Well, they cast it really well. Some with actors that you've seen before on other shows, Julie Bowen and Ed O'Neill and whatnot, but others that you don't know, and they're remarkable discoveries. You're a remarkable discovery. Ty, who plays Phil.
Yeah, and you know, I love the idea that that this is my chance to be introduced to people and to be playing this character is just it's really a dream come true.
Well, and it's mildly I mean, there's a commentary, there's a social commentary involved that this is a Modern Family. Families today in America are no longer around the world. They're no longer father knows best.
No,
with 2.7 kids and a father and a wife. You know?
No, and I think Jesse and I we've very early on talked about just with our respect to our relationship in the show. It's like, you know, I for me, when I was in school or in an educational situation, I always did my best learning, as I say, when I didn't know I was learning. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think the show has that opportunity to be sort of an educational device as well, because our goal is to make people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're most definitely, you know, bringing to the forefront the idea that it doesn't take just a mother and a father to raise a baby. Two people that love each other and have genuine love for a child can certainly give a baby a wonderful life. Mm-hmm. And I think people are kind of figuring that out, like, in our own little way. I say we're not curing cancer over there, but we're taking a shot at rickets, you know. we're gonna maybe cure gallstones.
You know, Godspeed, Eric Stones.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your hiatus tips via email to feedback@reduceshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reduceshakespeare.com, and our Reduce Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also find us on MySpace, become a subscriber to our YouTube channel, or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reduceshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, flamboyant queen Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Chuck Dressel. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Reduced Shakespeare Company alum Phil Abrams, who played John Locke's high school teacher on Lost, and to Eric Stonestreet. You can follow Eric on Twitter at twitter.com/EricStonestreet and catch his blogs and tweets from the set of Modern Family. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 166/498 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.